We're back with another edition of the Federalist Radio Hour. I'm Emily Jashinsky, culture editor here at the Federalist. As always, you can email the show at radio@thefederalist.com. Follow us on Twitter at FDRLST. Make sure to subscribe wherever you download your podcasts as well. Today, I'm joined once again by my colleague, senior editor at the Federalist, Christopher Bedford. He's also co-founder over at RightForge. Chris, thanks for stopping by.
Great to be here, hanging out with you once again on the Thursday in a sweaty room.
Sweaty room, no beer.
Sweaty Betty.
Worst of all worlds. So, Chris, actually, before we dive into, you have a really good piece out on the Federalist as we tape this today. But I wanted to first, just before we started, the CHIPS legislation was passed by the Senate. Can you give us just basically a quick reaction as to whether you think that's ultimately a good or a bad thing?
I think it's ultimately... Well, in theory, it would ultimately be a good thing because while it's certainly not the perfect bill, it doesn't end trade with China in the way that I would like to end trade with China. It doesn't have quite the safeguards that I would like against chip manufacturing in China. All these claims that the market is going to solve our microchip difficulties in this country in manufacturing are myths.
Yeah, I agree.
The free market has had decades to do this. It hasn't. We've had years now of serious security concerns over this, and nothing's happened because of money. And like, I guess we can go back to this fantastical period when there was a thriving U.S. Chip market that was free from corporate welfare, apparently. But that was when the U.S. government was like probably like the number one buyer of these chips.
Right.
So it's all farcical, and it would be a good bill to pass, but Joe Manchin seems to have potentially screwed it up. It might still pass.
Or wait, what happened today? I thought it did pass today.
It passed the Senate, but now it's going to the House.
But then why would Joe... Oh, you mean Manchin would screw it up in reconciliation?
Well, the problem is that Manchin came out and said he had promised the Republicans no reconciliation vote in exchange for the CHIPS vote. They did that, and then he reversed course and announced a deal with Schumer to pass reconciliation. So now this is in this kind of funny position. Actually, I saw it last week, too, with the gay bill. But this funny position where senators who voted yes are calling House members to say, you'll vote no. Stop this. The Republicans are lockstep generally against this at this point, even the ones who were for it previously.
Because of the poison pill attempts. There's a ton of lobbying that went into it.
Mainly because of Democrat backdealing.
Yeah.
And then there's so far a count of about 10 kind of AOC, Cori Bush-style Democrats who, you know, just don't want us to give out money to corporations to have microchip processing to take on China and this country. Mm-hmm. So between those, I mean, it's possible that the doves, like the unrealistic doves, will combine with the partisan enraged Republicans to stop this bill. And then I'm kind of sitting here wondering, just I was just talking to a staffer who's been working on this a great deal. Like, are we going to get any tech legislation this year?
Right.
Or no. I mean, maybe. We'll see.
And Nancy Pelosi's husband is watching very closely, of course, only to the public, only to the publicly available information.
Yeah. Nancy Pelosi, regardless of what happens, he'll get richer.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. No, exactly. And by the way, it's worth noting, Chuck Schumer, his two daughters work for Meta and Amazon.
And we have reason this week publishing articles from internet big tech trade groups, like without even listing the affiliation. I mean, yeah, big tech, they have no friends, but they have a lot of money. And, you know, I think there's a couple extremely weird and unsavory rich people out there who can really understand this.
Mitch McConnell, by the way, has a conflict of interest, to say the least, when it comes to China, as his father-in-law and sister-in-law have a lot of business with the Chinese Communist Party and the Chinese government. So you just
cocaine
basically
Mitch,
have
like he gets off so easy compared to the rest of them. But he's useful.
He does.
He does. He doesn't rock the boat.
All that is to say, between Pelosi, Schumer, Pelosi's husband's stock trades. And this, by the way, goes back to this goes back more than a decade with the Pelosi family and their stock trading and buying commercial real estate and sending earmarks in that direction. But between Pelosi, Schumer and Mitch McConnell, it's a good, I think, glimpse at how tech maintains the power despite having few friends that you just mentioned here in D.C., Chris. Switching gears, though, I was really excited that you published the story and were coming on the podcast today because you wrote a really nice story about, actually, of all things, Alzheimer's.
Well,
and
thanks.
Big Pharma. Tell us about it.
So I've been keeping track, just generally speaking, from like a layman's perspective of Alzheimer's advances over the last couple of years, because like most people in this country, they've seen it up close in their family. Mm-hmm. And just for some reason, I've just always felt like there's a good possibility that I get it, or one of my people who I really love very close is going to get this disease. And there's all these advances that come out, and my new medication's been approved. So I was shocked to learn last week, because of a friend who digs into this much more, about some of the new stuff that's been coming out. Some articles that came out in Science, and another article that came out a couple years before in Stat News. But Alzheimer's research is kind of an encapsulation of the brokenness of the United States in a lot of our elite institutions. It's a place it's a research that's been going. Alzheimer's was discovered in 1906. So it's well over a century of research has gone into this. Billions and billions of dollars have gone in. Institutes have been founded. The National Institute of Health has its own wing, which was started 50 years ago to tackle Alzheimer's. And there is not a single cure. None. And there's not even a single actual treatment. There's a few that in the early stages kind of give you like that Joe Biden boost, but nothing that actually makes you better at all or alleviates the symptoms for any kind of a meaningful amount of time. So the question is why? And it turns out that there's a cabal of scientists who have been running the research. They've got the elite positions for 40, 50 years. So to kind of rewind, Alzheimer's is discovered by Dr. Alzheimer in 1906, and he notices some plaque buildup and some interesting aspects on this woman's brain who had it at an early age. And that kind of becomes a focus, but it's early in medicine, modern medicine. There's not a lot of deep brain medicine going on. And it kind of lays dormant. There's not a huge breakthroughs until the 1970s when the government starts the National Institute on Aging. And then in the 80s when these private groups start to get together and put money into it and say, what's going on here? And they quickly reach a breakthrough. There's a kind of plaque that's identified in 1984, amyloid beta, that is seen throughout the brains of people who have suffered from Alzheimer's, particularly people who have suffered early onset Alzheimer's, people who get it in their 40s and 50s, which is terrible when you see it. A few years later, 1987, they kind of identify some genetic mutations, DNA mutations. So keep in mind, this is like Jurassic Park, kind of like Michael Crichton era, like genes and DNA and stuff. Mm-hmm. That's the most exciting thing. So this is really electric stuff to everyone. Mm-hmm. Further, DNA stuff is discovered, aspects and mutations are discovered in 1991. But at the same time, at this point, the idea that the amyloid beta protein is responsible for Alzheimer's has just become dogma. All the top people think it. We know that this is in the brain when people die of it. We know that this is in the brain an unusual amount when young people die of it. So this is what all the money starts to go toward. We need to stop this protein. How do we get it? What genes cause it? How can we defeat it? How can we remove it, etc.? And for decade after decade after decade after that, anyone who questions this thesis, you don't get speaker slots. You don't get published. And if you don't get published, I mean, scientists, just like writers, have a reputation that builds on what they've done, not just what they just did. So you could, if you've been rejected from 20 different scientific journals for different work because they didn't like your amyloid stuff, then other scientific journals are going to look at you and say, well, you've been rejected before.
Right.
Why would I publish you? It's kind of a cool kids club. The research money is really highly protected and coveted. The speaking gigs, the publications, the jobs. You can't even at these points go to a venture capitalist with an idea that's different from chasing this amyloid, because the venture capitalist is going to say, all right, I'm going to do my due diligence. I'm going to go to the top people in the Alzheimer's field, which you can look up, and say, what do you think? And they're going to say, don't waste your money. Don't waste your time. Big Pharma is the same. And, you know, some people, the article in Stat News from 2019 really got into this, but some folks were like, well, wouldn't Big Pharma get sick of failed research for 40 years straight? And the answer that one scientist posted to them was, yeah, but I mean, if you lose a bunch of money on something that all the top scientists say works, then you don't get fired. If you lose a bunch of money on something all the top scientists say was wrong, well, then you lose your job. So it takes a radical degree to break out. And there's been evidence that's been mounting for a long time to say, otherwise. Like, so the same year, 1991, that some of this amyloid stuff was really cemented, there was a study that came out that found, yeah, I mean, sure, we do find a lot of this in old people's brains, and we definitely find an unusual amount of it in young people with Alzheimer's brains after they've died. But old people who die, who have no sign of dementia or Alzheimer's, have the same level. So a theory starts to develop. You know, what if this is not actually the cause? What if this is just a product of the cause? Like if somebody, if you have AIDS, for example, you can show chest lesions and things like that. Chest lesions aren't what's killing you. It's just a symptom.
Right.
Or if you die of cancer or heart disease, you leave behind a tombstone. And we look in there and we're like, wow, there's a lot of tombstones. Look at all these dead people, a lot of tombstones. But the tombstone didn't kill you. It's just a sign. It's kind of a marker that there was this damage here that was done.
Correlation and causation.
Exactly. And people start to dig into this theory, but they're getting shut down over and over again. One researcher came out in the early 90s and found something that draws a correlation between herpes, for example, and the increased chance of having Alzheimer's later. Don't panic if you hear that. It's more complicated than that. But all this research was shut down. So we get to 2006. It's a 100-year anniversary of Alzheimer's. You would think that like this was starting to slow down. People are starting to wonder, what the heck is going on here? And then this groundbreaking paper comes up from a leading researcher who by no means is corrupt, and a new student hired from a French university, a new doctor right out of school. And this study just blows everyone away. They've discovered a new subset of the protein that causes this. They, for the first time, identified something that is unique to Alzheimer's patients. This article is one of the top articles of the year. It's cited in over 2,000 papers over the next 15 years. And by the way, those papers are doing work based on their work, which means it's like it's a pyramid that they're building based on this paper. And a group of this story is really detailed in a fantastic piece that came out last week in Science, that a group of guys who are shorting a company using this research, so they're trying to make a buck, went to this young doctor and said, hey, we'll give you a little less than 20 grand because we think that these photos are – we think this study is bunk. We think this study is fraudulent. We think it's wrong. So he's interesting short sellers. He goes in and does all of his image sleuthing and finds that a lot of these images appear to be like doctored, like clumsily doctored images, like different – he doesn't have access to the originals, so it can't be proven, but different images are copied and pasted clumsily to try and prove something that actually has never been repeated and isn't proved unless these images are doctored. So Science Magazine spends 6 months on this story. They bring in half a dozen different doctors and forensic imagery detectives, and they all come to the same conclusion with a couple different numbers. Like maybe it's higher, maybe it's lower, but there's definitely fraudulent work in here. Everything starts to shut down. The problem is this paper, that was in 2006, right around the time that the skeptics could have won, got past a kind of low-guarded, we already believe this thesis, we're just waiting to be proven right, scientific community, including the woman who was in charge of this study, who is by any stretch like not a fraud, the woman who's in charge, but she had to let her guard down. And it added another 15 years of garbage to this. And right now, the U.S. government's putting like $2.5 billion a year. That's more recent into this research. And it's all going the wrong way. And it's all going to not.
Something we talk about a lot on this podcast is how recent changes to the way humans live their everyday lives have caused all of these other downstream changes that are pretty major and that we don't actually think about that often. For instance, did you know that poor sleep can cause weight gain, mood issues, poor mental health, and lower productivity? Think about this. Sleeping less than 6 to 7 hours per night is actually linked to reduced white blood cell count. And those white blood cells protect our body against illnesses and diseases. They fight viruses, they fight bacteria, and so much more. I am one of those people that absolutely needs critical sleep. I need absolutely more sleep than most people probably do, but it's a huge difference, and we all know that because we all need it. Introducing Beam Dream. Beam is the world's most innovative functional wellness brand with unique products for everything from sleep to recovery. And today, our listeners get a special discount available for Beam's sleep product, Dream Powder, their best-selling healthy hot cocoa. It contains natural, sleep-promoting premium ingredients, triple lab-tested, no THC, and you wake up feeling refreshed, which, in my opinion, is just about the best feeling in the world. 98% of people surveyed fall asleep faster when taking Beam Dream, and 99% of people experience better sleep quality. You just mix Beam Dream into hot water or milk, you stir it, and you enjoy it before bedtime. Just taking the stuff out of the box, I took a look at it and said, this is awesome. You can find out why Forbes and New York Times are all talking about Beam and why it's trusted by the world's top business professionals and top athletes. Don't love it? You can get your money back guaranteed. For a limited time, get up to 35% off when you go to shopbeam.com/Federalist and use code Federalist at checkout. That's shopbeam.com/Federalist and use code Federalist for up to 35% off.
Reading about this incensed me because we're used to seeing this in COVID, and we're used to seeing this in COVID politics. We're used to seeing this in global warming politics, but you'll be frequently told by folks, oh, that's not real. Oh, that's not real. Fauci doesn't do this. The richest bureaucrat in Washington doesn't have anything but gold in his heart. All these different vaccine companies, they got nothing but gold in their hearts. The United Nations and the billions and billions of dollars to come up with completely false predictions like this island chain will be underwater by the year 2000. Bangladesh would be mostly gone by the year 2000, all of which turned out to be completely false. They're just trying to do this, and you're a science denier. So the way I wrote this article was, this is a completely non-politicized thing. Everyone in America cares about it. If you didn't see The Notebook or you didn't see The Father and cry in the theaters, then like you just probably missed it or read it. People know people. There's no politics. Donald Trump has never touched this. And it's just access to money and human greed and pride because it's your life's work. So if you get proven wrong, well, then you look foolish. It's like these scientists, aside from maybe this one or more fraudsters, are not bad people. They're just human, driven by greed, power, ego. I'm the greatest scientist on this. Like, of course, your theory can't be correct. I've spent 40 years going the other direction.
They exist in a deeply flawed incentive structure, it sounds like.
Yeah. And if you introduce the level of power and the level of money that comes in with COVID, global warming, or a whole other host of science, it's just you start to realize that all these different tropes we realize, like the science is settled, are just these mirages of authority and fact that behind them is just nothing but humans. And humans have egos and greed and perverse incentives and anger and pride and all these different things. So there was a great article written in Unheard in 2020, I think it was the best article of that year, that hit on everything is broken. Like, how much is broken?
It was in Tablet. Yeah.
It was Tablet. Excuse me. It was in Tablet. And this was just kind of another example that peeled it back. And I started off pitching our reporters on it, and then I just got so incensed. I was like, I'm going to spend a couple of days deep diving in this. And you know me, I'm not a scientist. So,
well, it depends on...
It's been interesting.
It depends on the science being studied. You're a scientist of certain subjects.
You know,
women, you study women, I would say.
More of an artist.
More of an artist.
And I can drink whiskey all day, but
Well, you're sort of a chemist. You're a longtime bartender.
I can go through a whiskey distillery like 24 times. I've gone through like 50. And if you told me how is whiskey made, I'm like, I don't know. My brain turns off.
But you can turn the whiskey into you can turn the whiskey into other concoctions, which
yeah, I can make a great Manhattan, best you've ever had. Guarantee it.
That's good. But back to Chris is so upset with me right now. It is good.
Not your brandy old fashioned. I'm talking about a Manhattan.
Yeah. 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 I remember when we made the Christmas Manhattans. I thought it was good. Really went right to my head. So I'm not sure that I have the clearest memory of how it tasted. Other than that, I drank it quickly. But Chris, back to this question, I think one of the biggest failures of the Republican Party over the past 15 years is healthcare, not putting forward a healthcare plan so that when you finally had the opportunity to repeal and replace as a Republican Party, there was nothing, the incentives weren't there politically to repeal because there was no solid consensus on what the replacement plan would be. And I think the problem...
Oh, they would have repealed if it wasn't for the fact that John McCain hated Donald Trump.
So... Sure, but that would have
been no plan otherwise.
That would have been an easier vote, I think, for everyone if there had been a plan, and there never has been a plan.
Which is shocking because you were in news media during the Obamacare years. Every like 6 months, some guy like Steve Scalise, I remember sitting through his presentation, would come in with their alternative to Obamacare. Everyone had their own plan that they'd written, and they would present on it at like all the reporters would gather in the conference room and hear about it. And then when it came time, everyone was like, "Well, I don't have a plan." I'm like, what was that presentation I listened to?
Well, I think it's because none of the answers were really satisfying. And I think that's because to have a satisfying answer on healthcare, you have to be willing to confront cronyism to a very, very powerful degree. And this is why, in the absence of a clear conservative plan on healthcare, this Medicare for All plan has risen in popularity on the left.
It's like, yeah, you it's get healthcare. At least it seems clear.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's all broken.
It sucks.
Busted
but...
incentives. The hospital, you walk into a doctor's office and say, how much is this going to cost? No one knows.
Right.
Like, no one. I mean, remember when Rand Paul was drilling on Dr. Tony the other day, and he said, well, how much money have you made for these different patents? How much money have you made on COVID? And he just, like, without an ounce of shame said, well, I don't have to disclose that.
Right.
And CNN was, all these reporters at Washington Post and CNN were like, see, he doesn't have to disclose it. It's a secret.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, what profession are you in?
Yeah.
What do you mean it's a secret? And why doesn't he have to disclose it?
Mm-hmm.
That seems like an oversight. I think
right.
you should have to disclose it. Why are doctors getting rich working for the federal government? I have no problem with incentive structures to exist, introducing market incentives into government work to push research.
In fact, that's how we've gotten some amazing research mm-hmm. and amazing
drugs. But here's an example of how it can be corrupted. Like, there's a lot of money and power in cancer research.
Yep.
And there are certainly some, you know, I think maybe it goes slower than people would like, for sure, especially people who are suffering from it. But there are cancers that you can get now that would have killed you 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Just a death sentence.
Right.
And now you won't.
Right.
So they're making research. Heart disease. I mean, heart disease and cancer are about as natural deaths as you can get.
Mm-hmm.
But the... And we've had great leaps and great bounds in heart disease. So it can work, but then you get these clogs. So you get this corruption like we've seen with COVID, where you have the doctors now coming out and saying, oh, yeah, we knew the vaccine wouldn't work. We knew it wasn't a vaccine. We redefined vaccines to make this. People making tons of money,
right.
Hands over fist. No one being held accountable to a single wrong answer ever. And like I know that in science you have to be careful that you can't be afraid to find out to not prove your point.
If you're like me, you might be dreading looking at your 401k or IRA account balance lately. You're not alone, and we're hearing all of the experts say there's just no place to hide. But that's simply not true. The truth is you can build a financial bunker that grows and protects your money even during the scariest economic times. The Bank on Yourself Retirement Plan alternative lets you escape the financial carnage and has never had a losing year in over 160 years. Whether you've been investing for years or you're just starting out, now is the time to bypass Wall Street and bank on yourself. Bank on Yourself lets you reach your financial goals and dreams without taking any unnecessary risks. You get guaranteed predictable growth and retirement income with no luck, skill, or guesswork needed. The strategy also lets you take a tax-free retirement income, which protects you from the coming tax tsunami. Unlike a government-controlled 401k, IRA or similar plan, you control the money in your plan, not the government. You can use the money for any purpose with no questions asked without interrupting the growth of your savings. This is the strategy famous businesses like McDonald's have used when no banker would lend them a dime, and almost anyone can do it. Plus, there's no volatility. Your plan doesn't go backward when the markets tumble. Both your principal and growth are protected. You can get a free report with all the details of how adding Bank on Yourself to your financial plan can help you take back control of your money. Just go to bankonyourself.com/federalist. That's bankonyourself.com/federalist. Well, whoever makes this Alzheimer's drug, whoever, let's say, this is just speaking in naked hypothetical here. If somebody cures Alzheimer's, if one of the companies does it, they will make a lot of money on that drug. Absolutely. There's no question about it. In development, though, and then in practice, there are financial incentives that are not going to be strictly in the benefit of the consumer. That kind of sounds like what's at the root of the problem here, that if you're getting an endless supply of money in the development phase and failing over and over again, but are fine in your sort of insular community. And because philanthropists and companies understand that there's a market demand and understand there's a moral demand, you have this endless supply of money. Well, there's a different incentive right there. And then once you sort of put the drug to market and, you know, you get something that's the government's involved, right? So the government comes in and subsidizes the drug, or the government comes in and approves the drug. But it's not in the interest of consumers, then you have skewed incentives again.
Yeah, and it's difficult to get to wade through it all. I mean, there's not, at least that I've seen from this stuff, couple. I've been reading about this since last Thursday. The takeaways aren't some golden policy that I can predict, but it's certainly to be super skeptical of anyone who ever says the science is settled. To be super skeptical of groupthink, which I think most people probably who listen to the Federalist podcast are. Yep. Otherwise, they would listen to like a million other podcasts that say the same thing over and over again. Ones that will never make fun of Greta Thunberg.
He's reading another book on the 30 Years War, by the way, for long-time listeners.
Get excited. Yeah. I just started the new book on the 30 Years War, and Yashinsky is not having it.
I'm not happy about it.
But I'm making great progress.
I got two Signal videos of him opening up his 30-year war book, and I didn't even respond to one of them. I was so upset.
It's kind of actually different. It's about Arctic exploration by the brand spanking new Dutch Republic during the 30 Years' War.
But you know what? That's interesting. And I'm going to do some gymnastics here.
No groupthink in that. And those groups, those guys were nuts. I'm going to sail to the end of the world. Why? Well, I think the Arctic is warm in the center. Why? Well, this guy thinks it is.
It has to be.
Give it a shot. What's it going to cost? Just my life and fortune. And
well, Molly Molly's favorite stories she's ever written is about we have to be more comfortable with people dying in space. And this period of decadence that Ross Douthat wrote about in The Age of Decadence, or Peter Thiel has talked about it, the end of sort of development. It feels like we've hit the brick wall and we're spinning our wheels going absolutely nowhere and with no ability, no tool to break that wall down or tools to develop such a tool. I get that sense a lot. And when you look back, I think it's particularly acute because in this country, we have been conquering frontiers for our entire history. Like, that is very much in the DNA of the United States of America. And it's what drove us to, it drove the world. It drove the West and the world.
Nowadays, we just make faster iPhones.
We make faster iPhones. Exactly.
So lame. Like, our technological innovations now.
It
like,
stalls.
Who would go to a world fair to see our technological innovations? No one?
Right. Like, we brought the Motorola Razr back. I don't even know if that was America, in fact.
No, Motorola?
Well, no, if the development of the Razr
and
was.
There's a great Peter Thiel interview on this, or story on
that's
it.
That's on Unheard.
And Unheard. Yeah. Peter Thiel, really interesting guy, really open view on him. But I'll tell you this, does not have a good grasp of Christianity.
I agree with that takeaway.
His explanation of Christianity was like, what?
Yeah.
Wrong takeaways. Super brilliant, but not a theologian.
No, I agree with that takeaway. And actually, to your point, just as we're wrapping it up, because I think this context of decadence and just stagnation is important to what you're saying. And there used to be in the West, in the United States, there was this frontier mentality. And we've gotten so comfortable and numb partially thanks to Big Pharma. But I was watching, I got a screener of the new Alex Jones documentary that is like exploding the left right now. They're so upset because Glenn Greenwald did an interview after a screening down in Austin with Alex Jones himself. And the documentary, I don't think is like overly friendly to Alex Jones at all. It's pretty critical
of
Alex
Jones. But it's not mean enough.
You know, exactly.
It's
right?
Like Space Force, which was a super funny show, but it wasn't mean enough to Donald Trump.
You know, this so is the thing. But the thing is, like, as we're talking about all this, so we're talking big pharma right now, which is something that Alex Jones has gotten things right and wrong on.
They are turning the frogs gay.
Yeah, the freaking frogs.
That's true.
Gay, yeah. But this is the point. Like, there is so little trust left that somebody like Alex Jones is powerful. And this documentary, I think, looks at how Jones understood so many lies that were being told by all of our institutions earlier than other people who are now mainstream have come around to, except, you know, they're mainstream in the sense that they are allowed to have a voice. They're allowed to exist on Substack.
Like 2 years after the Russia hoax was over, like, hey guys, I think this was a hoax.
Right.
Thanks. I'm glad you're here. Welcome to the party.
We should do a whole podcast next week on the series of mea culpas that the New York Times issued. We should go through every single one of them. They pushed their columnists to admit they were wrong about something. And Gail Collins said she was wrong to make fun of Mitt Romney for strapping his dog to his car 80 times or whatever she did in 2012.
Yeah, dogs love wind. Love wind.
I want you to get that on like a throw pillow. Yeah, dogs love wind.
I couldn't understand that. Like,
by Christopher Bedford.
If you guys don't remember this controversy, Mitt Romney got in trouble for strapping his dog on a cage on the roof. And it's like, I don't know, every time I drive, even in the winter, my dog puts himself out of the vehicle at like a deadly level, like a dangerous level.
Dude, you have a cat.
Yeah, but I used to have a dog. Okay. Didn't lose him on the highway.
Right, I know I've said this before, but I'll say it again. One of the reasons I'm in journalism is because I'm just relentlessly skeptical of absolutely everything, including those glowing MyPillow ads that we all see so much of. But my own skepticism, personally, was just gone immediately after trying MyPillow, which I really love. Did you know that MyPillow is also about more than just a fantastic pillow, though? Now MyPillow has given the same attention that they've given to those pillows I love so much to their new MyPillow PerCal bed sheets. The sale of the year on those MyPillow PerCal bed sheets is going on right now. The regular price for queen size sheets is $89.98, but now that's only $39.98 with your promo code. They're breathable, cool, and crisp. They're durable, built to last, machine washable for easy care, available in a variety of styles, colors, and sizes, and they also have a 60-day money-back guarantee and a one-year limited warranty. So go to MyPillow.com/Federalist or call 800-794-8429 for deep discounts on the MyPillow PerCal bed sheets. Queen size regular for the price of $89.98 are now on sale for only $39.98. While there, you can take advantage of the buy one, get one sale on MyPillows, towels, and more. Visit MyPillow.com/Federalist or call 800-794-8429 today for the sale of the year on MyPillow PerCal bed sheets. MyPillow.com/Federalist or call 800-794-8429. Our institutions are failing us, and we are casting everybody as a conspiracy theorist because of the skewed incentives, because pharma is such a powerful voice in Washington, D.C., and in the media. It sponsors a whole lot of media. So does big tech. Our institutions have been so successful that now they're basically like bought and paid for. They're inhibiting development, and they're inhibiting even conversation about the need for development, to the point where a voice like Alex Jones, who, again, is wrong about a
voice
lot.
Out in the wilderness.
Yes, and you know, like, people are also
the frogs gay.
Yeah, the freaking frogs gay. But the thing is, like, we can't talk to each other anymore because anybody who raises concerns, conspiracy theorists or otherwise, is evil, and they must be banished. I was saying this while I was watching the documentary. I was like, I actually feel like I took Alex Jones way less seriously when the guy was on Twitter, because his tweets were so hilariously out of this universe sometimes. And again, like, he's somebody who I am willing to admit, I am very, like, I find him to be a very compelling character. Not to say that, you know, I think he's right about things or is super.
He's right about, like, significantly more things than the average reporter.
He's gotten so many.
He just also has some really crazy ideas that, like,
directionally, he has been, like, in the right direction in a lot of really underlying questions.
Put a quarter in the Alex Jones's right chip jar.
Right.
And you've got easily enough money for a full night of drinking.
And the media casts him as somebody who's absolutely not. They call him conservative. He's not conservative. They call him conspiracy theorist when sometimes he's not talking about conspiracies. They call
he
him.
He does love conspiracies, though.
He does love them. Yeah. Oh, my
like
gosh.
Like Glenn Beck
yes.
on steroids.
But you know what? If if I successfully snuck into Bohemian Grove
and filmed it,
I would be like, oh my god.
Have you seen that footage? It's really weird.
Oh, I know. I remember watching that documentary as a kid.
And then speaking of conspiracies, like, I mean, you go on and you're talking about like the Great Reset. I did a Glenn Beck radio show. It was awesome. And it's like, you look at this, like, it sounds like a crazy kooky theory, but it's actually not. It's a conference.
Yes.
They have a conference. They have books. They have papers.
Like, it's the same thing with Bilderberg.
You don't have to make it up anymore.
Like, these are, you know, but you never did. And that's
but
the point with Alex Jones.
You say
Bohemian Grove and Bilderberg, he's been on those things for years. And again, like, did he go in conspiratorial directions with them? Yes, but directionally, there's something there. And because he's just been, I think, you know, since isolated and ostracized, and he always kind of was. But when you shut down the conversation, it makes things look so much more suspicious, and it makes the people. Yeah. Okay. Anyway,
by shutting them down, you make them stronger. It's like Obi-Wan Kenobi or something. You can just ignore him or something. But some of his things, I guess the one he's been most vilified for is a Sandy Hook conspiracy theory that it wasn't a real thing that happened. There was a false flag operation. I mean, that. Why is that so dangerous? Like, come out and say, you can easily disprove this.
It was debunked so easily.
So quick. I mean, light and clarity, oxygen and facts are a disinfectant for that kind of thing. All right, now try to disinfect his theory on the global reset.
You will never you will never have a world where people don't ask those questions. We're different. Some people are more skeptical of things than others. You will never have a world where people are not asking questions about these horrible tragedies being false flags. What you can do is have a world where those questions are litigated openly so that the obvious answer prevails. But none of our elites trust the American people anymore because Donald Trump opened their eyes up to how horrible and unwashed the masses are, that they it's just it can no longer be in the hands of the people. It must be in the hands of the giants. And that's to tie this back together. That's what's happening in pharma. That's what's happening in our institutions.
In science. I mean, it's happening in these non-politicized issues.
Yeah.
Imagine what's happening in the trans issue, in the trans camp, or in the global warming stuff and the COVID stuff.
People are making a lot of money off hormones. From the trans ideology.
There's a lot of pride in it. And they have just like these scientists who are out there to solve Alzheimer's with a completely wrong theory, they're wrapped in this veneer of righteousness that is dangerous.
And if you want insights into how, you know, conspiracy theorists, people who flirt with conspiracy theories like Alex Jones, get interested in pursuing these false flag inquiries when it comes to Sandy Hook, watch the documentary. I think it's really interesting. It's worth your time. And you can hear Alex Jones actually talk about how he ended up getting that wrong, how he got sucked into it. Is he, you may not be satisfied with his explanation, but it is more insight into the mind of somebody who went to an incorrect place. And that's a good thing. That is only a good thing. So, you know, just don't let the media get you to stop asking questions. Don't let the media get you to stop listening to people who do ask questions.
Or your neighbors or friends.
Right? Right. No, absolutely. Christopher Bedford, senior editor at The Federalist, co-founder at RightForge, author of this wonderful piece on Alzheimer's that folks can read over at The Federalist. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
You've been listening to another edition of The Federalist Radio Hour. I'm Emily Jashinsky, culture editor here at The Federalist. We'll be back soon with more. Until then, be lovers of freedom and anxious for the fray.
Voice of reason, and then it faded away.